welcome to the Vanderbilt University Center for Teaching podcast, part of the center's efforts to cultivate dialogue about university teaching and learning among faculty, students, and staff. I'm your host, Derek Bruff, an assistant director here at the Center for Teaching. This episode continues the format change of our last one. It features audio recorded during an April 2008 lunch discussion, co-sponsored by the Center for Teaching and the Center for Ethics here at Vanderbilt University. The discussion was part of our joint series, Technology, Values, and Teaching, and was titled The Mediated Classroom, Ways That Computer and Other Technologies Are Transforming the Space of Communication and Relationships. In just a minute, you'll hear the opening remarks made by the two panelists at that discussion, John Sloop, Professor of Communication Studies and Associate Dean in the College of Arts and Science, and Jonathan Gilligan, Senior Lecturer in Environmental Science and Public Policy. In their remarks, both panelists began exploring how technology is changing the ways in which we communicate and relate to each other, particularly in physical and virtual classroom spaces. Now here's our first panelist, John Sloop.
Thank you. I want to thank everybody for being here. I'm going to start off with a few comments. This really was quite nice yesterday when we got together for a meeting. I hadn't really met Jonathan before, although his name comes up constantly. I hear the same thing. So it was really wonderful. This is one opportunity for us to meet and begin talking, and I'm looking forward to this conversation today. Here's what I want to do. I'm going to start off with, I think this topic in some ways is going to carry itself, right? But I've got a couple things I want to say. I'm going to mix a little bit of metaphor with some practical things that have happened to me in the classroom. In 1964, Marshall McLuhan published that landmark book, Understanding Media, The Extensions of Man. In that book, he made an argument which, a metaphor that I still think is very, very valuable for us to think of in terms of space and place and how media communications, not just in the classroom but everywhere, not only change space, but they're changing the meaning of space and the meaning of who we are and access and viability. When he got us to think about all media as prosthetics, right? As prosthetics, as extensions. So understanding media as extensions or as prosthetics, prosthetics necessarily change the human body, where it can be, how it can go. His argument, as many of you will know, was that one of the human impulses is to try to extend itself in space and time infinitely, to be everywhere at all times. All media, in some sense, do that. They're going to extend space and time. Cars move us faster. Telephones allow our voices to go further, etc. All discourses have done that. McLuhan somewhat fell out of favor. Now, he was writing more about the televisual age at the time for several years, as theorists often do. It's been relatively recently, in the last 10 or 15 years, as internet studies takes off, as we begin thinking about other types of communication, that I think the metaphors that he provided us with are useful in how we think about all of our experiences with communication technologies in places like the classroom as well. And I want to make sure that I'm using that metaphor when I talk today and when I'm approaching things today, because that's how I think about changes. And a couple of the claims that McLuhan provides us with, or ideas, I think are useful ones for us to think of. First off, the changes, when McLuhan made that famous claim that gets misused all the time, the medium is the message, right? McLuhan wasn't arguing or suggesting that the way we communicate in any one given instance changes the message. He's saying that the changes are intergenerational rather than interpersonal. That is, when I go into a classroom today to communicate, or when I communicate here, I can no longer communicate in a literal culture. Even if I write a book, you don't read it through literal eyes. You read it through televisual eyes or through internet eyes. These are generational changes. An important thing for us to consider in that the classroom, the students we're talking to, are extended differently, understand themselves differently, understand communication differently, regardless of how we communicate. The medium of this culture is a digital medium, more and more so. It's a digital culture, regardless of how we communicate. It's a digital culture, whether we're communicating in traditional books or what. And we have to keep that in mind in the classroom. There is no way, in other words, of changing this or turning it back. You can't simply say, I won't let them use the internet, or what have you, right? Because these are intergenerational changes and assumptions. The extensions of us change who we are, how we think. Relatedly, McLuhan's concept of auto-amputation is a useful one to think about in approaching these topics. What he argued is, whenever we add any prosthetic, we necessarily sort of are amputating part of our traditional bodies. So we can take care of that. We have cars that changes the type of bodies that we have. We don't have to walk and do that to structure. Now, I can become a runner and continue using my legs, but in general, we won't do that. So if we begin using one medium over and over and over, when we first start writing and using books, we have fewer needs for mnemonic devices to elaborate memory, etc. So we don't use that as much. We amputate that part of our thinking, our characteristic, our way of being. And once again, I think this is important for us to think about what we can and can't do. We can't simply say, right, we want to reestablish older ways of thinking. We'll have students turn off televisions. It's a way of thinking. Parts of us have been amputated or changed, and we need to think about our bodies differently and spaces differently. And thirdly, again, McLuhan says we need to think about the unintended consequences of our media usage. They always have changes that we don't expect, and we all know this in the classroom now. There are no solutions to mediated changes. This is the new condition that we have, and this is what we need to think about. So how does it change things? We know this. The classroom is larger in time and in place than it's ever been before. Where is the classroom end and begin? We know that this is a very difficult question to ask now because, what, we all have news groups that we use, discussion groups. We can use bulletin boards. We can communicate with students outside. We communicate over email and over telephones. The expectations of the material we have to use in class are different. We can bring in almost any material in and outside of the classroom. The space of the classroom is fluid. And I want to make stress that I don't think this is simply a matter of you can show a video in class or you can show something on a computer in class. This changes the way that we approach the material. It changes the way we think about what's going on. The upside of this, of course, makes space for the creation of knowledge and conversations way outside of the classroom. Those wonderful spaces for conversation that I'd like to see the students do more often in class can take place outside of class. Students think just like I do. I do some of my best thinking. Unusual places, right? And I can share that with others and communicate with others in those spaces. I need to find ways to take advantage of that. So I said I'd talk about some practical things as well as, you know, sort of the metaphor. When I first started in 1993, when I was at Drake University, I started using Usenet groups, if you remember those alt discussion, whatever, for my classes to discuss. And it was clunky because they had never used them before. And so I was using them, I would get them involved, and I found that a little bit clunky. So then I started using email distribution lists, right? And that worked for a while until the students quit using their university accounts. And so then I used Oak for a while until I discovered that those students would only go on to Oak if I told them they had to go on to Oak. So what I've discovered I have to do now is use Facebook as a discussion group because that's where they are. And so part of my advice is where are their discussions taking place and where can we join them? This is a matter of my taking the attitude that I will chase them down. I will find them, right? And I'm going to be part of those communication structures wherever they are. And as I go there, of course, those structures become less hip and they move on. I'll be there as well. The downside of the space issues are certainly one of availability. The expectations of availability of you, the virtual you. The fluid walls are also social in the classroom, as we know. That fluidity doesn't just open up the classroom for knowledge, for text, for the things I want to bring in the classroom. It also opens up the classroom for discussions of the party that afternoon or all types of discussions. If any of you went to the Vanderbilt Visions, the play this year at the beginning of the year, it was a struggle to keep students from not opening their cell phones and look at text messages throughout the play when it got darkened. And again, I think this leads us to thinking about what are the possibilities of opening the classroom and closing that space at the same time. Difficult ones to find balance between how you do that structure, but certainly something to think about. And how virtual your anonymous self is going to be. Part of our discussion yesterday in terms of who we are. And I was thinking about, you gave this nice presentation, and I was thinking, gosh, you go give a talk now, and the introduction is normally, it's now your internet footprint, right? So people find all this information about you. And students can find that as well. What is my virtual self?
Because that becomes part of that.
I know that. But what is the virtual self that I'm bringing in? And finally, one of the topics I find most interesting is the notion of what counts as authority. And this is not so much a spatial account, but it's something I think we have to think about. One of our arguments McLuhan made was that with the rise of print, when print culture was the dominant culture, the form of the book, right, looks like a closed-off, complete knowledge, right? The print set, pretty, it's a square block, it's complete, it's finished, it's objective, it's outside of the body. Leads to a culture of hyper-rationality. Of course, television changes this, and of course, the internet changes it even more, right? So, with new media from television and internet make knowledge, seemingly, would create a culture where knowledge seems non-rational, more fluid, more diverse, more seemingly relative, in that it's not contained, it's participatory and democratic. Upside of that, certainly the students seem, or could be, more willing to challenge knowledge. Now, I don't know if they're more willing to challenge it for all sorts of reasons, but they're more willing to distrust it. And I don't even think it's like they want to distrust it. It's that there's so much knowledge from so many places that have the form, that have the same form as vetted knowledge, that knowledge becomes fluid. So while the democratization knowledge has something good, it's participatory, it's democratic, it brings in a sense of discussion in the greatest Aristotelian sense of, you know, the truth went out. That's not what seems to happen, right? What seems to happen more and more often in my experience is that what counts as real knowledge in their minds doesn't go through the same process as I would like it to. So we have arguments over what is valid and what is invalid knowledge. So whatever I present, if they can present something else that's been said the same, sort of a destruction of those issues or deconstruction of those issues. So something else I think we need to think about. So those are some of the issues that I've been thinking about. And with that, I'll turn it over to Jonathan.
Okay. I'd like to start with, I'm going to kind of give a less theoretical, more kind of impressionistic sense of kind of what the changes that new communications technologies making in both the scholarly and the classroom side of my life, and in talking about sort of the role of spaces, kind of what are the spaces in which we interact as scholars or as teachers. And one thing that has particularly struck me over the last about 14 years has been the transformation of the library as a space, where it used to be the space where I would go and spend as much uninterrupted time as I could, going through the stacks, finding these little serendipitous things where I'm looking for one book and the corner of my eye catches something else which takes my thinking off in a new direction. The chance encounters with colleagues that we have that lead to a conversation that can again completely transform and enrich a line of thinking. And now many of us, myself certainly, do almost all of my library work electronically, sitting alone in my office. And at the same time, there's this loss of that library as a social and thinking space, a physical place we go to do that work and all of the things that happen there because it is a physical space. But at the same time, there's this elaboration of that space through, now when I see a paper that's really interesting, I can immediately send copies of it to all the colleagues I want to talk about it with, and then they'll email me back something, and in the course of an afternoon, we get into this really interesting conversation over the paper. So the space has changed. It's become less social in some ways because I'm sitting by myself, but more social in others because it's so immediate, the way in which I can share my thoughts with people I'm working with. And similarly, with students, we'll have now, there is a richness to the kind of interaction I can have with people who will say, hey, professor, here, I saw this paper or this news story here, and here's the URL, what do you think about it? Instead of waiting, trying to photocopy it, bring it to class, maybe the idea is passed by the time they do that. And so there's something very interesting to me in the transformation of the social interactions around scholarship now are around the communication in this virtual place rather than in the physical space of the library. In another sense, also, with the lowering of the barriers to putting information out, we find a much richer range of things that's available to people to look at, which can either provide a much more nuanced sense of the scholarship around an area, or can allow people to pick and choose only those things that they tend to agree with to begin with. And so we can have the potential of a richer conversation or a completely polarized conversation. And teaching around environmental issues, climate change, I really see both sides of this. People who are inclined to assimilate the things that will strengthen their position have lots to dig up, and it becomes an interesting challenge to decide what of this information that's out here, now that things aren't only being put up at scholarly sites and through traditional printed peer-reviewed journals and books, how do we establish what information is credible? How, as a teacher, do I interact with students trying to give them a sense of being critical about the sources of their information, and what do I do when I differ with them about the reliability of a particular thing? And this is something 15 years ago, I would run into this with, plenty of stuff gets published in bound books that is of dubious scholarly merit, and it will find its way into the library and somebody will pull it out. And so it's not a new issue, but it has become different with the ease with which Samizdat gets put out. At the same time, something I found really, really interesting is a transformation in that's happened with the growth of blogs as a serious medium of communication. Because where 15, 20 years ago, even 10 years ago, most of what I was reading was polished material that had been through the whole editing and peer review process. And so you see finished products, and sometimes you wonder, how did this come to be? And sometimes a social scientist will have gone and traced down the story of how some idea grew, developed, and so forth. Now we have a lot of informal conversations on blogs and elsewhere in the internet world that then get recorded for posterity. So we and our students can go and watch ideas being developed in very rough form and evolving in the face of responses in a way that we could not before. And again, watching and participating in many of the debates over scientific validity, scientific trustworthiness, connections between science and politics on environmental issues, this is becoming a very interesting and rich place to play and explore and read.
You've just heard the opening remarks made at an April 2008 lunch discussion titled The Mediated Classroom, Ways That Computer and Other Technologies Are Transforming the Space of Communication and Relationships. The speakers were John Sloot, Professor of Communication Studies and Associate Dean in the College of Arts and Science, and Jonathan Gilligan, Senior Lecturer in Environmental Science and Public Policy. The discussion that followed these opening remarks was a rich one back in April. If you're interested in responding to the comments and questions shared here, please visit our blog located at blogs.vanderbilt.edu/CFTpodcast and leave a comment. We're interested in hearing what you have to say about the ways technology is changing how you communicate with and relate to your students. You'll also find on our blog links to our speakers' homepages. Vanderbilt instructors interested in discussing teaching with technology or any other aspect of their teaching are invited to call the Center for Teaching at 615-322-7290 to arrange a meeting with a CFT teaching consultant. We're glad to help you reflect on and explore the various choices you make as a teacher, and to connect you with resources you'll find useful as you design, implement, and assess learning experiences for your students. I would like to thank our speakers today, John Sloop and Jonathan Gilligan, for sharing their thoughts. I've been your host, Derek Brough. Please join us again in a few weeks for another episode of the Center for Teaching podcast. Thanks for listening.